Today, I'm thrilled to introduce you to a brand that is a true love letter to all women and today's sponsor of our show, Holistic Goddess. This brand is a sanctuary for those seeking holistic health solutions, offering a space where women can heal, grow, learn, and naturally embrace their inner goddess. They distill decades of wellness wisdom into forms that are accessible and relevant for women, emphasizing the importance of self-love as essential self-care. They're committed to producing clean, natural products with simple ingredients to support women at all ages and stages in their unique health journeys. I personally experienced the power of their commitment when I tried the Bison Trifecta from their Naked collection. It's a potent blend of freeze-dried bison organs, heart, liver, and kidney in capsule form. And honestly, the change was almost instant. Within probably just about 3 days, my energy level soared. I was handling my hectic schedule better and skipping my usual midday crash. That's really important, you guys. This product's purity is impressive too. No vaccines, no antibiotics, no hormones, no fillers, nothing. Just packed with bioavailable nutrition that your body absorbs right away. Since I started using the Bison Trifecta consistently, I've noticed my hair and nails growing faster. And on days I forget to take my Bison Trifecta, I can immediately feel the difference. But once I take it, I'm right back to feeling this new, incredible me. It's become an essential part of my daily routine because feeling this amazing, knowing that your body is working the way it was intended to makes you never want to go back. Also, their signature collection currently offers 10 distinctive products that target a variety of women's health issues. There's sleep support gummies, joint relief, metabolism support, cognitive brain support, hair, skin, and nails gummies, and a bunch of others you should really check out. So for anyone listening who wants to experience this for themselves, use code UNDERSTOOD for 10% off Bison Trifecta. Visit holisticgoddess.com and see how it can change your routine just like it did for mine. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com, code UNDERSTOOD, HOLISTICGODDESS.com. Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Today, we are joined by Sean Spicer, the former White House Press Secretary and Communications Director for President Donald Trump. With a background in political strategy and communication, Sean has been a prominent figure in American politics, known for his tenure at the White House and his work as a political commentator. He is also the author of The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President, where he shares his experiences and insights from his time in the Trump administration. He is here today to break down his thoughts on the debate last week, predictions for what Biden will do going forward, and he also explains the Supreme Court's ruling that came out this morning on immunity, how that affects Trump, and how that even affects Biden. We get to the heart of the importance of transparency in politics, and we finally address what COFESE really is. Please welcome Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer, thank you so much for joining us today. You are very busy, so let's get right into it. The Supreme Court has ruled in the immunity case. Is that a win for Trump?
Absolutely, both legally and politically. Legally, this was kind of silly. Like, just so people understand, if they're not like watching cable news or following this stuff on X, the first threshold was that the president deserves some kind of immunity, right? I don't know why this was ever actually, as a non-lawyer, like an issue. Like, we give cops immunity, we give members of Congress and other government officials immunity, meaning when you're doing something in your official act, that you're immune from being sued over it. So, for example, if you think about this, if you are, let's say, the president of the United States and you order a military strike, there's no question, I don't think, in anybody's mind that you can't be sued because a civilian was killed, right? That shouldn't be a political issue. And that's kind of the big threshold that had to get crossed today is, does the president get immunity? And then the bigger question is, okay, was President Trump, after the election in a lot of these acts, acting in his official capacity or in his personal capacity, right? Because again, I think we can generally agree that the president of the United States walks down the street and robs a bank, he's not acting as president of the United States. Mm-hmm. So the court had initially said, no, there's no immunity. Like you, and that's silly. I don't think this was a really tough political issue. But then the court today started to break down the difference between official and personal. That's the legal piece. On a political piece, the key was if this came down anywhere like it did today, it ostensibly kicks the can down the road past the 2024 election. So mm-hmm. politically, that helps Trump because it means that they're not going to be dealing with this in the lead up of to the election. And, you know, think about it. It's like in the last couple of months of the election. Again, I would hope that even if you're a big Trump hater, you don't think it's fair that one candidate had to sit in a courtroom for the last 2 months and couldn't campaign. I don't know that we would argue that was a fair election if that were the case.
Right. Do you think it's going to make it complicated, though, because the lower courts are going to have to decide what's official and what's not official?
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Yes, that's right. So as I said, that kicks the can back, right?
Yeah.
And so Trump's going to say, yeah, I was being president of the United States when I said all this stuff. The government's going to say, no, you were candidate Trump, right? And therefore, so you're right. The lower court is going to suss it all out. Now, as a non-lawyer that just watches a ton of Law and Order, my guess is that the lower court says you were acting as in your own personal campaign candidate capacity. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go back up to the Supreme Court and they'll say, in this particular case, we believe. So that's why this is politically a bigger win than it is necessarily legally, because it's just going to take forever to sort it all out.
Okay. And then for people that are hearing in the tone that Trump has been having about Biden, and if Trump gets elected, Biden could be in some trouble. Does this help Biden at all with immunity, so to speak?
Absolutely. No, it helps everybody, Rachel. And that's the key thing, right? So prior to this, as I said, I mean, if you go back through every president, Republican, Democrat, they've done things that you would never say you should be sued about, right? So a policy that they institute, you can't go back and say, so for example, 13 people died when President Biden withdrew from Afghanistan. No matter how much you don't like President Biden, I don't think anybody would argue that we should be able to sue him for that and say you are criminally negligent for the deaths of those 13 soldiers. Mm-hmm. As much as I think it was a bad policy, I would argue that he shouldn't go to jail because of it. He was acting as president of the United States. And what President Trump was saying in the debate the other night was, hey, Joe, you should be equally concerned about this case because some rogue prosecutor in a red state or a red county could come after you if they don't give me immunity, because now people feel like the process has been weaponized. And so that's why I think this was a smart move on the court's case, excuse me, on the court's behalf, because it really was silly that we had never given the president immunity from their acts in their official capacity.
Okay. All right. So let's get to what happened last week in the debate. There's about 126 days until the election. The clock is obviously ticking. A poll came out saying 72% say Biden doesn't have the mental capacity to be president. Doesn't this make it impossible for him to win an election?
No. I think it's very difficult. I don't think he will. But there's, look, the question you're asking, this is where I think there's a couple things. God, I don't even know where to begin with this. So I don't think the debate was going to move either way. And I've said this on my podcast almost every day, because we are so dug in as a country. So I'm a Trump supporter. I'm voting for President Trump. There's nothing that you can say right now. And I know the left and the media keep saying, well, what if he's convicted? And what if this, like, they kept trying to figure out what would get people to budge. And everyone was saying, we're not. In fact, in a lot of cases, it helped him politically. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing with Biden folks. They don't care. They're dug in. They're voting for Biden because they either love Biden or they hate Trump. And it doesn't matter. We're a very polarized country. And there is, like, Virginia had this poll the other day showing it was dead tied and only 4% were undecided. Mm-hmm. I actually think that's kind of high. Like, who are you that you don't know? I mean, at this point, it's like Biden's been in office for 50 years. Trump's been around. Like, you have to be like a rock under a rock on top of another rock that, like, got bulldozed by an old house or something. Like, I don't know who you are that you don't know who you're voting for.
Well, wait a minute, but you're dead set on Trump, obviously. But I'm someone who was, you know, dead set on Biden. After watching that that debate, I know I can't vote for Biden. So unless they replace him.
And maybe you don't vote. Yeah, I get. I mean, my point is, and that's why I said there's just a very slim group of people.
You think that's slim? Okay.
Oh, I do.
Okay. So now, so are polls accurate? Do you think they reflect the actual voter, or it's the people that are like doing these polls and it's more of, you know, somebody that doesn't really exist?
So no. Polls matter, but they show a couple things. They show momentum and movement more than anything else. And people forget that. When you take a poll, it's a snapshot. So it's sort of like photographing a runner running down the road. You're catching them and stopping. Now that runner could be going slow. Maybe they're ending the race, or they could be speeding up. The photo only tells you where it is at that second. Okay. Second, I do think that people are going to get a little bit of a bounce out of this debate. Trump will. I don't know that it lasts. It's like conventions and big speeches, State of the Union. There's a bump. It's a sugar high, politically speaking, and it gets them for a second. People will come back down to earth in a minute. The other thing is, I said this prior to the debate, and I wanted to make sure people understood the context. I'm a huge New England Patriots fan, okay? And I can admit once in a while that, say, the Jets have a good game. Does that mean I'm not a fan of the Patriots or I like the Jets? No, it just means that you can admit the obvious sometimes about a team. So after Thursday night's debate, I think there's a lot of Biden supporters that can say he had a really bad night tonight. Trump had a good night. That doesn't necessarily mean they're all voting for him. We saw this with the first debate, Romney versus is Obama, et cetera. And so I just don't want to put too much stock into one thing, especially something that happened this early, right? This is batting practice of a 9-inning game. And we've got VP pick on Trump's side, 2 conventions, and a lot of TV ads, et cetera, before we actually get even in early voting in September. I'm just saying I pumped the brakes a little and say, yes, is this bad? Is it really tough for Biden to overcome this? Absolutely. Let me just tell your audience the sort of the phases that we're at between now and then.
Right.
Between now and when the convention starts, if Biden were to step aside, which I do not think he will do, Jill Biden, Hunter Biden, they're all like, we're in this to win it. And I don't doubt them. They are not going anywhere. And Joe Biden hates the elite establishment trying to push him out. He's not going anywhere. If he did, between now and the convention, it would open up a convention and the delegates would decide. Here's the caveat, the star, what everyone has to understand. The geniuses in the Biden campaign missed the Ohio ballot. Okay. That's a whole nother story. But what that means is they are now going to virtually nominate him a week or so before the actual convention. So it's not the start of the convention that matters anymore. It's this virtual nomination that the DNC will convene that is when he becomes the official nominee. Once that happens, he is legally the nominee. Okay, we enter phase 2. If Biden were to drop out between when he becomes the nominee, virtually nominated, and the election, November 5th, the Democratic National Committee only, those members of the DNC, would select his replacement. That's it. No one else gets a say. After the election, between the election and December, when the electors meet, the electors would actually have a say. They get to decide who to vote for. And they could write in another name after the Electoral College meets, assuming that it's like if it's still the ticket and Biden were to step down or something were to happen, Kamala Harris, as his running mate, would assume become the president. Those are the phases and opportunities that exist. But I don't believe that Joe Biden will step down. He is going to be the Democratic nominee.
Okay, so I appreciate all of that. That's very helpful. But there obviously has been so much talk about if, you know, he does step down, if he does agree, how complicated would it really be to pick? I mean, I saw just this morning the list of whatever it was, 9 people that they are looking at to replace him. How complicated would that be? Would that just be a free for all and everyone go nuts?
It's a free for all. It goes to, and this is true for both parties. If he were to step down, as I said, in phase 1, before he becomes virtually nominated, It would be what they call an open convention. And this is, you know, pre-1972, we did these. This is not, I mean, it's not like anyone can really remember them, But that's how it used to happen. And the delegates get together and they get to decide. It would be, it would be great television. It'd be like a reality show.
Yeah.
Here's my view on this. I don't know how. I mean, so yes, they get to decide, and that's it. Each delegate in each state delegation would get to cast their votes.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot see how the Democratic Party, as it's constituted today, overlooks the fact that they have the first female Black vice president. And like, I know a lot of people are talking about Gavin Newsom. It would be a civil war within the Democratic Party to choose a straight gay guy with good hair over the sitting Black female vice president of the United States. I mean, I would be in political heaven if that happened. But I just cannot believe you're going to choose. I mean, I get it. He's got great hair. We can all bipartisan wise. Gavin Newsom looks great. He's got it's really nice hair. But they're not choosing the straight white guy over the Black female.
Right. Okay. So, but do you think there's anyone who would be a threat?
No. And I don't say that. Look, everyone knows where I come at. I've been very clear. But here, Kamala Harris is more unpopular than Biden. I will give Joe Biden a ton of credit for selecting her. When you select someone that's more unpopular than you, you guarantee your nomination and your job security, right? If she was flying high and she was really popular, they'd be invoking the 25th Amendment. They would be talking about, they know they're stuck with her. She's worse than him. She couldn't even get through Iowa in the Democratic primary when she ran. Okay. Right. So that's number one. Gavin Newsom, I mean, again, remember where this election comes down to. And that's why when pundits want to go out there, the number of swing states that matter still matter, no matter who the candidate is. Take Biden out, put in blank name. And Gavin Newsom would do worse in Michigan and in Wisconsin. All of the leftist policies of California. Can you imagine just campaigning on the California emission standard alone in Michigan, where automakers are huge and auto workers are huge? You would rule. I mean, Michigan would be off the map in 2 seconds. You mm-hmm. would just make that the singular issue in Michigan. Bam, there go those 15 electoral votes, 16 electoral votes. That's gone, 15. And so that, you know, and then when you start to take apart the states and the issues, immigration would be a massive issue in Arizona. Boom, that's gone. So state by state, and when you play it out, Gavin Newsom's almost as bad as Biden, if not worse. Kamala Harris is an absolute disaster. So let's go. I mean, they're stuck with Biden. That's the reality.
Okay. And then just in a total hypothetical, I mean, I know she has said that she's not interested in running at all, but what would you say about if Michelle Obama stepped into the race? First of all, would that even be a possibility, and would she be a threat?
In a theoretical way, right? You could be the nominee. I could be the nominee. I think I probably have a greater chance of being the nominee than Michelle Obama does. She doesn't want it. Michelle Obama has made it clear since the jump that she doesn't like politics. She doesn't like a lot of the partisan stuff. She's got a great gig right now. I mean, I always think being ex-president has got to be the greatest job ever. So I don't think she wants it. Could it happen? Sure. I think that, again, let's go back to how this would play out. Do you really think that, you know, I told you why I think it would have to be Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. But let's go down the list. Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, you know, whatever, right?
Do you think
any of them would say, oh, sure, I'm going to step aside and just let Michelle Obama waltz in? No way, Jose. These people have been in politics and are itching at the shot. They're not just going to give it up. The one last thing I would say to reassure people on the left, if you're Gavin Newsom or anyone else for that matter, right? Do you really want, if you're waiting for your shot to become president, which, I mean, Gavin Newsom has been the best understudy, like, I don't want this job, but wink, wad, I really do, I've ever seen, is you're not going to want this environment. You want Trump to run and then run in 2028. No one wants this to be their debut, right? So if you're any of those up and comers, the last thing you want to do is get handed this hot potato and say, okay, your turn, because mm-hmm. you're going to get crushed. Trump wins, and then your political history. They would rather just wait till it's an open race in 2028. It would be stupid politically for anyone to accept this hot potato from Joe Biden.
Right. Okay. I'm curious about your thoughts about how Trump did, though, on the night of the debate, because, I mean, did you think he had a great night?
Yes. I mean, all the expectations were that he was going to come in, he was going to interrupt, he was going to be whatever. He was calm, cool, collected. Boom. I think he did exactly what he needed to do. And I was ecstatic about his performance.
Okay. And what about, you know, all the commentary that he lied over 30 times? Do you believe that there were any lies that he made that night?
Look, I will say this. I will answer quite, but it's funny to me, the narrative. I talked about this on my podcast today. Where's all the lies about Joe Biden? He said no soldiers were killed under his watch. There are 13 dead service members. The Gold Star families of those service members would take issue from him saying that. He lied about the border. He even lied about his golf game. Like, it's amazing that a guy, Biden, whose first run for president was derailed by plagiarism, who gets called a gaffe machine. Why are gaffes with Joe Biden? He lies about teaching at the University of Pennsylvania, not getting a full scholarship, some dudes on Amtrak, his uncle and his father. I mean, he tells story after story about personal issues and policies that are simply not true. And yet he's branded the nice guy with a bad memory, and Trump is the liar. Look, it was funny. On abortion, Kristen Welker and a bunch of others said that Trump lied on abortion. The tape is there. I tweeted it out. Governor Ralph Northam, a pediatrician, our former governor in Virginia, said that the baby comes out and we wait, we put it on the table, we make a decision. It's on audio. It's actually on video, even though it was on a radio station because they were simulcasting it. I tweeted it out. It's at the top of my Twitter feed. You can watch that. That's not a lie. They may not like it, but that's a fact, right? He said it. He was a Democratic governor of Virginia. He's an actual doctor, by the way. And they're saying that Trump lied about that because that's not the official position of the Democratic Party. What is the official position of the Democratic Party? Because their platform makes it clear that abortion is okay up until the moment of birth. That's their official position. Again, the media may not like it because they don't want to ask Democrats that question, but that's their position.
Well, okay, it might be their official position, but as a woman and someone who has had a child, I know that you are schooled when you find out you're pregnant, you have to make some decisions before the third month, the fourth month, because you cannot, no doctor will abort the baby. I mean, in listening to Donald Trump.
But again, the fact is that what their position is and what you're talking about are not the same thing.
Explain.
Trump was arguing what the Democratic position is. That's the quote that he cited is on tape. That was Ralph Northam, the doctor governor of Virginia, saying it.
Right.
So if you have a problem with that, not you, but if someone in the media, then talk to Ralph Northam, not Donald Trump. Donald Trump's quoting Ralph Northam. And then they're like, that's a lie. Well, then bring it up with the guy who said it.
Right. Okay. I can respect that. Okay. So we were talking earlier about voters watching the debate the other night. There are a lot of undecided voters, and people obviously were very panicked about what happened with Biden, I will say. So now I think what becomes really important is who the VP pick comes to be for Trump. So now, first question is, do you think that Trump will wait to figure out if the Democrats, what they're going to do with Biden before announcing the VP pick?
First of all, that's a fabulous question about VP timing. I actually, before we started, I was like ready because I'm discussing that tomorrow on my show. So but can I make one quick point that I want to? Every Republican, when Trump tweeted back in the day or said something, would have a microphone in their face and saying, is Trump fit for office? Okay. I would get calls all the time when I was a spokesman at the RNC, when I was White House press secretary, this guy said this, you know, is Trump fit for office, right? After the debate, what are they asking Biden and Democrats? They're saying, can he win? Why isn't anyone asking the question, the fundamental same question? Is he fit to be president of the United States? Is he fit to be leader? Are you okay with him? They're asking a political question. Can he win? And as I said to you earlier, sure, anybody could win. I mean, that's the nature of a democracy. But should he win? Why are they not asking Democrats the same question that you're getting at, which is he fit? Are you comfortable with a man that performed the other night leading this country? And when you see international leaders around the globe, our allies and our adversaries, both expressing concern, That's not a sign of strength for the United States. So I just wanted to get that because to me, the fundamental discussion shouldn't be who can win or lose.
Yeah.
It's the same question that everyone's been asking about Trump. Should he win or lose? Are you comfortable with him as president of the United States? Because I watched all these Democrats.
They might not be asking Democrats that, but I know within the public, that's what we're all talking about.
Right, but they don't want.
For sure.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's my point, though, is that what you're bringing up is what should be getting asked.
Yeah.
Now, let's get to the VP pick.
Okay.
Fundamentally, Trump is a showman, right? And he understands that he's got this pick. I would argue that I would wait right now. Let Biden keep dealing with this debate fallout, this mental acuity. Don't insert something that changes the narrative or gives them fodder to go after, right? Keep it, hold it for as long as possible. In 2016, we waited with Mike Pence until almost the start of the convention. I would wait until maybe the Friday, the Saturday before, and do it, maybe even Monday night. So traditionally, the conventions start on a Monday. On Thursday, the nominee of both parties gives their acceptance speech, right? Again, with the Dems, it won't matter. He'll already have been the nominee because of this virtual roll call that they're going to take. But that's the big night that everybody's. And then on the Wednesday night is when the vice presidential nominee traditionally gives theirs. If I were Trump, maybe wait till Monday night. Get some real excitement going, but don't change the narrative right now. Keep it focused on Biden and his fitness for office.
And when you're talking about fitness for office, I do have a question. How do you prove mental acuity? I mean, for the most part, we saw how he was on Thursday. We saw how he was the next day when he came out. But that was scripted, right? So, don't you think he needs to prove how he can talk when it's unscripted? Or how do you prove his mental acuity?
So you're asking an interesting question because how do you prove it? I mean, there's cognitive tests that one could take medically, right? That you could go see a doctor and they could give you a series of tests, both. I'm sure that there's wires they hook to you and talk about whether your synapses are hitting the right way. I'm not a doctor. But I think to the essence of your question, we see it. I mean, we know whether somebody's up for a job or not, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about an athlete or the president, right? You watch somebody who's had an injury return to the field of play and you go, gosh, they don't look like they did. They're not up to the game. Or wow, they're really ready to go. They're back. And I think the same thing's here. I mean, look, in the game of politics, appearances matter. And I think that we all saw something Thursday night that you're articulating, which is he ready? And I've said to folks before, it's not a number. It's not an age thing. We all know people that are 90 that are sharp as a tack. And we know people that are in their late 50s that are already starting to decline. It's not a number to me. I think that to answer your question, you see it.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think Trump knows who his pick is right now? And could that change if he waits it out?
And you're good because yes and yes. I think he knows who he wants to go with, but I've seen this before with him, but that doesn't mean it can't change. So I think he probably has a favorite right now that he's thinking of, but I've seen him in personnel and policy decisions change his mind. And so I could easily see something changing between now and then. And by the way, so my top three, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of you.
That's the next question. Great.
All right. So I'll hold off. But I will say, you see all these top guys on television all day long and talking about their fundraising prowess. They're doing events. They're making interviews. And so they're all still trying to do something. So to some degree, they're playing the ref there. They're trying to figure out, can I get an edge? Can I do something at the last minute that changes the dynamic?
Right. Okay, so let's get into your top three picks.
Burgum, Vance, Rubio. I don't think that that's any shocker. I've had Lee Zeldin, the former congressman from New York, as my dark horse because there's something about Trump that always wants to be apprentice style. You didn't see this coming, did you? And right now, those three are getting so talked about. I think they'd all be great for different reasons. But I think that if I had to break the top three down, I'd say Burgum and Vance are probably one tied. And then Rubio is, technically in that scenario third. Mm-hmm. But I can see cases on any one of the three, as I said. So, but Burgum and Vance keep going. It's one of those races where they keep, you know, one advances a little, then the other one catches up. And I can see either one of them right now having the edge.
Do you think that Nikki Haley will come out of nowhere?
Come out of nowhere to go where? She's definitely not being invited. No is the answer. She is going nowhere.
Okay. How important is it to not mislead the public?
Important, but keep in mind that, you know, everybody's going to spin their side of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, think about, I have kids, right? They come to me and they go, hey, Dad, I got to talk to you about something. So I broke this thing, but we needed a new one, right? I mean, it's like, you're always going to spin your side. So there's a difference between saying something that is entirely false. Did something break? No, it didn't break, when you know it did. And saying, look, it broke, but we needed a new one and they're on sale. And so I got, so how you present your side is very different than telling a complete falsehood.
Okay. So the reason I ask that is because a lot of people say that Trump, you know, exaggerates or lies. And for you, who have direct knowledge and have been the one to sort of present some of these facts or lies or whatever people will call them, I'm just curious about your opinion on how that goes down in history.
Well, again, there's a exaggeration is not a lie. That's why there's a difference between exaggerating and lying.
Okay.
Now, the funny thing is, I've thought about this a lot. And I'm going to present my case to you on something that I found fascinating. When you turn on the morning shows, right? And I flip around every day because I'm sort of a news junkie addict. How many times do you see something about the story everyone is talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Is it the story that everyone's talking about? No, it's not. That's their way of selling it. Like, and I'm trying to think of a couple other examples, but that's the one that really always comes to mind to me. You know, everybody's talking about this. This is something that everybody's weighing in on. No, everybody's not. Mm. Are they lying?
No, I see what you're saying. It's just a spin on what they want to get the story out. Their narrative.
But I find, so again, it's to me, as someone who has, you know, taken the arrows, why is that not a lie? Why is it when they start a show off and say, the story everyone is talking about? Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't talking about it. A lot of times I'm like, I didn't even know about it. How was I talking about it?
They'll argue that that's opinion or whatever.
But when Trump says, I think it's going to be the greatest ever, or I had the biggest this, why is that not? I mean, so it's different when he says it versus when they do it. And that's what I think is interesting, is that the media gives themselves a pass on so many issues when they're wrong, when they deceive people, when they spread misinformation. Right. Think about this. The White House this weekend, NBC News reported the president was having this big confab with the family at Camp David, whatever. Right. Mm. And it was this breaking news story, this big scoop. And then the White House put out the schedule from earlier this week that said it was, I think, June 23rd. And they put out on their Twitter feed and said, we put this schedule out a week ago saying that we're going to Camp David as a family to take a big family photo with Annie Leibovitz, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. And then NBC was making it seem as though this was an emergency meeting of the family at Camp David to decide its political future.
Right.
Well, okay. The White House went after them and said, simply not true. The media does this all the time. It's just that they want to call a group of people liars. And like I said earlier, with Biden, it's called gaffes. And yet with people they don't like, it's lies.
Right. I totally hear what you're saying. But I guess it goes back to there are certain facts you can go with. Like when you were working for the White House, let's go back to the one where we were talking about the crowd size, right?
Yeah.
It became a big joke and, you know, SNL did it a couple of times. And it's like,
I heard that.
Yeah. Did you? Okay. So there are facts as to how many people showed up. And then we think that it seemed like, you know, the biggest crowd size ever, right? I mean, do you see the difference?
I do. And again, I don't want to relitigate something from 7 years ago, but but just so you understand, first of all, I've said, God, if I could take a mulligan or a redo on that day, I would. Right. But just so you understand what we tried to do that day, and I led that team. So this is on me. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not trying to obfuscate or not. I take responsibility for what I said and what I did that day. But so you understand kind of what we're talking about now. The goal was to communicate the interest in that day. We started the morning with a couple outlets from CNN, NBC, trying to minimize the president's win and support. And so what I was doing that day was saying, hey, look, it's not just the people, because everyone focused on the crowd size there. And I was like, look at the audience overall in person and overseas. Because what I was trying to do is say there are technologies available, live streaming on Twitter, for example, being one of them. And there were other live streams that weren't, frankly, technologically available 8 years prior. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually. And now, again, was it the smartest way to do this? No. What I'm trying to say to you is that I wasn't trying to make the case. Look at how many people are in a square mile of the Capitol versus how many people were in the square mile. I have eyes. I knew that. I could see that. What I was trying to say is, hey, look at the number of people. I was getting calls from, you know, different media execs that their audience online was bigger than it ever was, and da 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 da. And hey, this technology wasn't even available in the past. And I was like, oh, okay. I can now make the case that the interest was greater because it shouldn't. I mean, it's like saying that more people watched it than George Washington. Well, of course they did, because there was no TV or internet back in the founding of our country. Right. I didn't think, and again, it's not an excuse. It's just to give you a sense in a rushed time frame. We were trying to minimize the stupid critique that was coming about something so trivial that happened. Now, remember that same day, just so we're clear, the reporter went into the Oval Office and lied about the bust of Martin Luther King being removed, trying to make this a racial thing, when in fact the bust of Martin Luther King had been moved right behind him. He just didn't turn his head around to see it. And I spent the afternoon putting out a fire, trying to claim that somehow President Trump had removed the bust of Martin Luther King. But no one cared that the media had misled them and tried to stoke racial tensions. Right. Because, well, gosh, we'll just move on from that. We'll focus on what Spicer said. And I get it. But just they do stuff all the time, and they forgive each other. They minimize their own mistakes. Because it's not even equal, right? So Corinne Jean-Pierre gets up there every day and says word salads that I can't even decipher, and they say nothing. When I was at the White House, literally the Playboy correspondent got a CNN contract because of a sparring session he had with Sarah Sanders. Now, to most people, I hope that you at least take cover knowing that Playboy has a correspondent, so now you can go read the articles. That gives you some cover. Men out there, if that's really what you need to claim that that's why you get it. But the reality is that tells you about what the media value, not the sourcing, not the quality of the reporting. But hey, look, you made a jackass out of yourself in the briefing room. We're going to give you a cable contract.
Right. Okay. I totally appreciate your explanation there.
No. Thank you for the therapy session. I appreciate that.
So I do want to ask what it was like to have that job in the White House, because for people like me, we all became huge fans of you. Whether or not we liked what was going on in the White House and the chaos in the country at the moment, we tuned in every day just to see you, because we found you humorous, empathetic. I loved you. I thought you were great.
I'm glad I entertained you. Thank you.
So, you entertained most of the American public, making it all the way to SNL. By the way, did you watch those SNL things?
So I'll tell you the quick story on this. Yes, eventually. I'd woken up the Sunday after that aired. Obviously, I didn't stay up to watch Saturday Night Live. I don't mean to make myself sound old, but with the job that I had, I cherished sleep. I had two young kids at the time. And we were in church, and I had two phones at the time. One was a personal, one was the White House. The White House didn't have texts at the time. I don't know if they do now. And so my personal phone just started buzzing like I was getting texts in, because I was in church and I had silenced it like a good Catholic. And so I knew something was going on, but I knew that it wasn't that important because I wasn't getting called on my White House phone. And I get out and I see like, dude, that was funny. Oh, my God. So I rush home after mass. Normally we used to get donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. My kids were like, are we stopping? And I'm like, no, we're going straight home. I do DVR the show. As I said, I'm a news junkie. I DVR probably way too much stuff. So I DVR and I look at it, and it wasn't the cold open at that first one. It was 15, 20 minutes in, and I watched it and I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So that's kind of when I knew that my day was going to take a big turn, on a Saturday. And so
did you think it was funny?
I did. I mean, that first one was funny. And again, the week that I had, I felt like it was sort of like cathartic. It was just, okay, at least there's something fun. Did I, like, on a professional level, I'm not so sure. On a personal level, I was like, okay, kind of deserve that. But yeah, I got a kick out of it. And, you know, I was like, okay, lesson learned.
Right.
Take your spanking and go on.
In general, how did you feel about your time in that job?
Some days were better than others. You know, there were days in which I felt professionally it was like, wow, that was great. Nailed it. There were days in which I was like, I knew I missed something. And but it was like walking a high wire act every day.
Yeah.
You knew the attendant. I mean, there was stupid stuff. So at one point, Politico tweets out, Spicer just tweeted out the passcode to his Twitter account. And so everyone starts piling on me. You dummy. How did you do this? How could you be so, you know, careless with, you know, this? And I'm like, did anyone stop and look at the account? So the White House is at PressSec, and this was at, you know, poorlittlebunny.52. But it just, instead of at the name, it said they changed it to PressSec and put a picture of me. No one had actually stopped to look at it. And I was like, I'm getting whacked. Because these dummies at Politico couldn't actually read a Twitter handle. It wasn't at PressSec.
Right.
And so there were days in which I can't win. Like, I'm literally getting whacked for something because a bunch of journalists don't know how to read.
Okay. I just want to ask, I know it's 7 years later, but what is your official statement, I guess, now on Covfefe?
Oh, my gosh. I think the president said at the time, that's only something between you and I. And that's literally what he said to me. I called him and I said, Mr. President, there's a tweet out. And I didn't even know that I called it Covfefe at the time. I just said C-O-V-E-F, you know, whatever. And he's just like, okay, Sean, that's something that's only between you and I. And I'm like, okay, all right. And then he was just like, that's it. And I'm like, okay. I just assumed that he missed. I mean, like, the funny part is a guy who is a horrible speller. Like, horrendous. I was like, I thought he either was trying to type something and mistakenly hit send or slipped off, which, you know, I'll confess I've done a few times. So that's, but the one thing about Trump is that you don't press him. Like, I mean, I was like, okay, this is dumb. It's not like that's like some urgent, like, I need to understand your thoughts behind this policy. It was silly. It was dumb. Meaning that, like, the interest, it wasn't like anyone was really trying to figure out, is this like the new code or something? Like, they knew that it was a mistake. He knew that they knew it, and he was just trying to have fun with it. And that's it. It wasn't, so I wasn't going to give it any more thought of, like, God, I really need to get to the bottom of this. Like, it was some Scooby-Doo mystery.
Right. But instead of just saying, you know, I think the president, you know, misspelled something like we always do, we're getting a laugh at it. The fact that you kind of doubled down and made it seem like it was a secret.
Well, I didn't double down. I said what he said. You know, they said, what did he say? And I said, here's what he said. And Rachel, that's the thing.
But you could see the humor in it, correct? I mean, the way that
I could, but one of the things that a lot of folks in the media and the public don't fully appreciate is when you're the spokesman, it's not like you're the interpreter. You're not going, what he meant was, you will last about 8 seconds in that, right? Imagine a lawyer walking into court and saying, look, my client's going to plead not guilty, but the reality is he's pretty guilty. He did it. You'd get fired. You'd get sued for malpractice. When you're a spokesperson, your job is to communicate the thoughts and ideas and policies and announcements of the principal that you represent. You're not going to always agree with them. Policy-wise and personally, there are things that, you know, but I've worked for, I don't know, 10 different members of Congress. And like, that's the nature of the job, right? If you work for a huge corporation, a Fortune 500, I guarantee you they make policies and decisions that you don't agree with, but you don't walk out and go, what a dumb move by the company. Like, that's the choice you make. You want to be a spokesman, you represent their views and thoughts and you communicate them. You don't get to go, I don't agree with that, I'm going to tell you what he thought. You'll be fired within 5 seconds.
Right. Why did you ultimately resign? I mean, I've read it was because of hiring Anthony Scaramucci. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little more. Look, the reality was, I mean, kind of as we're batting around, there was not an easy day at the office, right?
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, here's the reality. This is not going to get better, right? I could smooth it out. We had been interviewing people for a while, I was filling two jobs. I was the comms director, communications director, which is the long-term piece of the job, and then the press secretary, which is the day-to-day interaction with the press. We'd been meeting with people trying to figure out how to reconfigure the press office, you know, to get additional senior support. There's just, it was, trying to do both jobs is not a winning recipe.
Nothing.
And when the president wanted to bring in Scaramucci, you know, Anthony may, he's apparently, you know, from what I can tell, a very successful financier and investment guy, but that doesn't mean that you are a good communicator, right? The job of the White House comms director is to understand the various departments and agencies and synthesize a lot of their actions when it comes to, you know, how they're going to roll out policies and interact with the White House. Mm-hmm. That you have to understand the role of government, the agencies, and what the White House can and can't do, the outside role of stakeholders in Congress. And as much as he might be a brilliant financier, I was like, this is not going to end well. Mm. It's just not going to go well. And so if I thought that by adding people onto the team was going to help, this was not something that was going to make me take something off my plate. In fact, it probably would have been harder. Right. And so I said, well, this is an appropriate off-ramp. If the president wants a reset, we've been talking about this. How do we do this? Then I have to be responsible enough to know that it's not about me. I could have stayed in that job. He asked me to stay. Mm. He said, you know, but was it good for me and was it good for him? No. And so I mean this in all honesty, that I think that sometimes when you ask God for something, he gives it to you and you have to be willing to accept it. And I had said, I need some help. I'd prayed about a lot of things. And I thought, this is your off-ramp, dummy. You better take it.
There.
Do you have any regrets from your time there? I mean, you talked about wanting some mulligans in the past, but is there like one that stands out to you?
No, there's probably philosophically, I don't look at life like regrets. Are there things that I would do over? Yes. And there's a bunch of them. And frankly, I don't, like, I will stop when we do this interview and say, oh my gosh, you know what I should have brought up? Okay, make a note of that the next time you talk about. I believe, you know, in the military, at the end of a big exercise, we usually do an after action, a hot wash, three up, three down. We look at what went well and what didn't. Mm-hmm. And I look at my interactions personally, professionally, the same way. So are there things I would have done differently? 100%. I don't know that I live life going, God, I regret that. There's something about the word that I feel like is a drain on you. Like,
yeah.
Like, and so I personally think that I would do a lot of things differently. There's the interactions. God, I look back at meetings that I had and it said, why didn't I, honest to God, there are times when I said, I should have taken advantage of that opportunity with that person. I should have said, thank you. I should have called them afterwards. I should have brought this up. So all the time, I mean, I look at things that I wish I would have documented better. There are things that I could have been more articulate on. So yes. And I frankly think that if you want to grow as a person and professionally, that's a very healthy way to live.
Yeah. Well, you sound like a man of faith, and it sounds like, I think instead of regrets, it's like things that you've learned. And as long as you take the lesson and do better the next time, that seems to apply for you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. You have a documentary out. I watched it last night. It's called Trump's Front Row Joes. You know, I have only really watched Jordan Klepper's version of the Front Row Joes, if you've seen him. So yours was a little bit different than his. And I actually found that it was a really interesting take on these guys. Just talk about your documentary for a second.
So I've been in politics for almost 30 years, which, you know, I don't look it, but it's true. So we were having this discussion once and I was like, I've never seen a movement like this. So normally when a politician has an event, they send out, you know, mail flyers, they call people, they do digital advertising. Hey, I'm having this big event at the state fairgrounds. You should come 7 o'clock Friday night. Trump sends out a single tweet and tens of thousands of people show up. And in particular, there's one group, the Front Row Joes, treat it like they're deadheads going to a Grateful Dead concert. They go over and over again, some 50, some 80 times. They come 3-4 days early. They sleep in their cars on the grounds of the event so they can be in the front row. And I wanted to document this because I'm like, this is not normal. People don't have movements like this, politically speaking, on either side. So we started documenting them. We traveled with them. We went to their homes and their places of businesses. For the last 2 years, we sat down with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago and we were like, what do you think about this? Did you ever expect this movement to play out the way that it did? And I felt like if I didn't do this, nobody would. And I felt it was important for history to explain why this movement is different than anything we've seen before. There are super fans in politics, but they might write letters or tweet stuff or whatever. But the idea is, you saw some of these guys, $50,000 a year following President Trump around. That's crazy. They stand outside Mar-a-Lago with flags, you know, just to support him. Now, I just, like I said, and it's these people travel. Like, they are, where are we going next? What do we do? How much time do I need to take off from work? I'm so fascinated by it. And I felt like, whether you're a Trump lover or hater, to understand the movement is important for politics and for history.
I agree. I thought it was an important documentary to watch. Okay, where can people find that, by the way?
So Trump's frontrowjoes.movie has the trail and everything. Or if you just want to go watch it right now, go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com has it all. So yeah, you can go to either frontrowjoes.movie, which I thought was kind of cool. Instead of .com, I got .movie. Mm-hmm. Or just go to salemnow.com.
Okay, last two questions here. Just succinctly, I know we've talked about it, but what is your prediction for the election in 2024?
I think that right now, I did a segment on this. If anyone wants to go to my YouTube page, check it out, The Road to 270. And I went state by state, which is how we vote, and laid it all out. I think that Trump is somewhere at about 260 electoral votes. Biden's at about 230. And what that means is there's about six states out. I think Trump just has to hit one of the outstanding states and he wins. Biden has to run the table. And that is such a reversal, politically speaking, of how it has been the last couple of cycles, where Republicans had a very narrow path and the Democrats had everything to lose. If Trump can pick up Pennsylvania in particular, 19 electoral votes there, it's over. But if you look at Wisconsin, 10 electoral votes, Michigan, he can look at multiple combinations and become president again. Biden is now playing defense big. And I think this debate is going to hurt his chances to take at least potentially a couple of those swing states off the table and make his path to 270 a lot closer, a lot harder.
Are you in contact with Donald Trump still?
Yes. Yes.
Do you see a job for yourself in the administration if he wins?
I don't think on a day-to-day basis, like a press secretary thing, but last term, I was served on the board of the visitors for the U.S. Naval Academy. I served commissioner on the Commission on White House Fellows. There are ways to serve that I think would fit my lifestyle now. I've served in the military for 26 years. There's a lot of things within that realm that I could do. And we'll cross that bridge when I come to it. I've spent a lot of time serving in the government and the military. And so if there's the right fit, I wouldn't rule it out. I think going back to the White House would be a very tough sell for me and my family.
Is there something in your future that you really want to do? Is there something you aspire to do?
I spent my whole life, the last 25 years, as a spokesperson, talking about other people. I have a show now that I do every night, the Sean Spicer Show, YouTube, Rumble, Apple. And I love being able to talk for myself and sort of take everything that I've learned over the last 25, 30 years in politics and talk about it and explain it and say, this is why this matters or why this isn't going to happen. So I enjoy that. And I want to keep doing it. And I like the life that I can live now where I can spend, in DC, people will say, spend more time with your family. Depending on the job, it really is true. Like, it's tough when you have a family to be like, hey, I know that this big press conference is happening or this rollout, but I got to go to my kid's basketball game. Like, I've now for two years in a row been the assistant basketball coach for my daughter's team. I, take my son golfing. You can't do that with some of these high power jobs.
Yeah.
And so it's important to me to be able to do that now and to make up for some of the lost time that when I not just in the White House, but I was 6 years at the RNC. That's a relentless job. There's always an election. There's always an issue. And then before that on Capitol Hill. So I look, I don't like to say never because you don't know, but that's not really the plan.
Yeah. Sean, I will say for someone that has different opinions on some of the things that I do, I really like you. I think you're a great communicator.
Well, thank you.
I've really appreciated your time. Where can our listeners and viewers find you and find out more about you?
SeanSpicer.com has it all. You know, you any of the things that we mentioned, or you want to follow me on any of my channels. As I mentioned, YouTube every night, we put out a great show that I think, yes, I as you said, I'm a partisan. I don't doubt, but I try to do more of the explain the system and what's happening and why so that people can understand it. So if you can go to YouTube and subscribe, that's great. But SeanSpicer.com, I have a great Substack newsletter that we put out twice a week that people can subscribe to. And, you know, I appreciate you having me on to have this conversation because, you know, the thing, Rachel, is too often the exchanges that we see on cable are like 6 seconds and 10 seconds and 15 seconds. And to be able to explain some things and have a conversation with people is something that I value and I know you do. And I appreciate that because too many people go, I can't believe that you fill in the blank, had a discussion with you fill in the blank. And it's Absolutely. Like, really? Like, we've gotten to a point where you can't talk to somebody. I'm very open and clear about where I stand on issues, but I'm willing to listen to people on the other side. And I am really disheartened by the nature of our society today, where we attack people for even listening or engaging in a conversation.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I do hope that our listeners have kept an open mind and maybe it's helped them come up with some new clarification. So again, have a great day and good luck to you in the future. I really do wish you the best.
You too. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for 5 different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.